Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein.
Today on NFP, the artist Arena BB joins me to talk about her recent AI-assisted collection, Playing Chess, which was featured on the front page of OpenSea. We discuss her creative process and delve into the topic of AI collaboration in art.
Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with me, Dee Klein. Today's episode is brought to you by the Koi Network. Koi makes minting NFTs super easy and inexpensive. Just drag and drop your file using their NFT wallet, Finny, and Koi takes care of the rest. Minting costs as little as 1 cent, so you can create as many NFTs as you want. And when they're viewed by other people, you even earn Koi tokens that you can use to fund your next series. Check it out at koii.network. Right on. Well, hey, thanks, Arena, for joining me on NFP today. It's nice to connect with you. I saw your work on, I think it was on Twitter, might have been on Instagram, probably a few weeks ago, and just saw this really cool work that you, congratulations, got featured on OpenSea's front page. That must have been a good feeling.
And
I just thought, this is really cool. I'd love to talk to you about your art and what you're doing, and really beautiful work. Can we start by talking about what was that was like, that experience of being featured on OpenSea?
Well, I reached out to them when I started preparing this collection. I think like a month ago, I reached out for the first time. There was no response. It was all via email. Then I reached out again, and they responded like a couple of weeks later. I think probably after the collection already was launched, or like a week prior. And they actually redirected me. I think they saw that I was 10K collection that trying to get primary feature. And I was like, no, I'm a 101 artist. So they forwarded email to their marketing team. And they do not tell you if you get accepted or not. They're like, we're considering. They're also not telling you what day it's going to be up if they approve you. So there is like that, like... we sent it to marketing team, and then one day I just woke up and it was like, I think my friends on Twitter shared the screenshot. So I'm like, oh, we're on. They approved, I guess. Yay!
So a total surprise.
Absolute surprise. I mean, it makes sense that they do it because obviously front page does drive sales. And so I guess for the purposes of no backdoor type of insider trading, so I don't just randomly tell to my friends like, hey, tomorrow is going to be up. I guess that's why they do it. So I guess even with like being approved or not approved, maybe that's why also it's a total mystery, because that's also with like, even if you don't know the date, it's still like you have the collection. So it's a total surprise and it's good. But I guess this collection launched on January 6th, and today is what, 21st?
Yep.
Yeah, so it's been a while, and Mint is live right now, so I think around 60 pieces are still left out of 420. Okay. So I'm like already kind of, I've been working on it for such a long time. It's been, I guess, 3 months of me working on this particular collection. So whatever happens right now, I am excited, but I'm more settled. Like, I'm happy, but I'm like, it's every single day I'm working on this. And I'm trying my best to get as many eyes as I can on artwork. So I'm more enjoying of a journey right now versus like this like momentum excitement. Like, I was excited when I saw it on front page. But I think the first day of launch, I was even more excited. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, and looking at your work, obviously you primarily are doing physical artwork, and this is kind of a departure for you, is my impression, the using the AI as something that was a tool for you to use based on physical work you created.
Can you tell me about that process? Like, what led you to that?
So I originally did canvas paintings for already about like 8-9 years right now.
Right.
And 2 years ago, when I discovered NFT space, I experimented with a little bit with Cinema 4D and trying 3D art. But to me, that was a bit, I'm not really enjoying like using computer as much. Like, I didn't enjoy it at that time. I like the process of, I work with Cinema 4D with all this 3D, but you need to know this Cinema 4D like so well, like where all the little tools are in. And I studied, I think, for about 2 months, and then all of a sudden I kind of dropped and switched to drawing on iPad, because just staring at the computer screen overwhelmed me, I guess. Right. And then I started doing digital art. And then I was also very interested in AI. At that time, there wasn't platforms available like DALL-E, for instance. So you would have to train your AI by yourself. And I was looking at Claire Silver, maybe you know. And she'd been such a pioneer with AI, and she'd been such an inspiration. And I loved her work. But I still felt like, oh, now I have to spend so much time again with computer, which is that going to be even more complicated, I guess, than Cinema 4D. So I kind of put it aside and I didn't really dive into that. And about half a year ago, when I got access to DALL-E and when AI became a little bit more mainstream,
right,
I realized that there is so much of opportunity there and so much of experimentation, and it's just an infinite inspiration loop that you can create for yourself with, like, for instance, in my case, I took my canvas painting and I ran it through AI, and every single time you do that, it gives you different variation of your painting. And even if you run the same image over and over, every time it's going to be brand new image. Of whatever AI sees in your art.
So are you adding like word prompts to it as you're doing that, or are you just feeding the image
I'm just feeding it through and just curating, and it's just thousands of images you run through in order to pick, like in instance I did 420 pieces, so to pick this 420. So I also, to me, it was, I didn't realize at the time that so many artists were very negative toward AI. I thought everyone was kind of like me, just waiting for it to be more easier and a little, because it also wasn't as much educational content as it is right now. So you would have to really, really kind of go through the forest by yourself, versus now it's so many threads and so many YouTube videos that you can look. So I kind of thought that people were just waiting. And then when AI hit and we finally have this opportunity, you see all these negative comments. And I was honestly so shocked, because I believe we do, the main argument with AI is that it was like using other artists' work to study without their consent. And to me, it's like, firstly, it's not a complete copy pasta of somebody's work. And obviously, you're not supposed to use somebody's work without their consent, or like completely copy that. But don't we all stand on the shoulders of generations of previous artists and who've been, we are where we are because of all the artists that have been there before us. And what we are producing and what we are creating right now with AI or without AI, that's going to be a like foundation for artists in the future. So I thought maybe with my painting and with this project, I hopefully could inspire other artists to experiment with it, to at least give it a chance to take a look, maybe start again. Right now you can train your own AI and it's a little bit easier, because there's a little more content on it, so you can do it faster, I guess. And that was my intent to begin with this collection. I wanted to show that it's possible to create your original painting, to be original, and then use AI as a tool. And it's not a threat, and you can just kind of put it all together and collaborate, because to me, it is a collaborative work, because I put my share of work in it. I created a painting, and then AI put their share of work in it, and it showed me so many more different versions of this painting. And when I was looking through them and I saw some of the versions, I'm like, oh, I want to paint this on the canvas. But obviously I cannot like completely paint exactly the same image, because every single time if I stare at the image and I try to paint, it's going to be in my own weird style. So then I can see this through AI, and then AI is going to create a different. So it's a loop. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting though, because in your case with the AI, it's clearly your work, and then the AI is being used to, you know, mix it up and change and so forth. I think personally, I think probably some of the criticism for it comes from people who are not doing that step, where they're not actually putting in their own, you know, artistic elements to it, right? They're just churning out something from others.
But then the prompts that people use in order to create, it's a word art, basically. And I read somebody used up to, I think, 800 words, and then finally discovered his own style. Like, after using 800 words for one image, and that was finally, like, I love this work. Now that's going to be my signature style. So, of course, there are going to be some sort of like coping, I guess, but like, unless you discover your style within this realm, this is so mainstream right now, nobody really gonna, it's kind of the same as, I guess, when somebody tries to paint your painting that they saw on you, like on Instagram, for example, and they paint them by themselves in their house, and just like completely copying it and putting it on the wall. And it's like, that's also an argument. It's like, can you do it? Can you not? Like, this technically not legal, but is it nice? It's like, there is such a deep conversation you can have with it. And I'm sure in the future years to come, there are going to be some, I guess, legal distinguished, like, artists going to be more protected against this, I think. And their style and their work going to be more protected, and we'll figure out the way. But I feel like right now people are so negative towards it, to the point where they do not give a chance for themselves to explore it. And that's the big issue. I think we need to give it a chance and work with it and see what we can do with it.
What do you think of the argument that some people make that, you know, it devalues art because, you know, it reduces the creative process in some ways? What do you think of people who, because there are a lot of people who are highly critical of it, you know, like you'll see this on different platforms where they're like, no AR allowed or whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to think of platforms like, say, DeviantArt had a lot of criticism of that. What do you think of that whole argument?
I believe if you're stuck at marketing, no matter what you do, even if you create the most genius, the most beautiful masterpiece that's been created on this earth, if you're not able to let it out, like let the world know it's there, nobody's gonna know. Unfortunately, that's the truth. Or like, if you don't get lucky and somebody who is really into art, like was Gala for Salvador Dali, like if you don't have this person in your life who pushes you so hard, or like that person is good at marketing, nobody gonna know anyway. So I do not think that it's gonna like put the value down. It's just, it's all up to an artist and the way you like navigate in your career and you market yourself, and giving yourself a space to experiment and try, because for some artists it worked to have thousands and thousands of work being like Andy Warhol, the very common example of that, and for some artists scarcity worked. So I guess everyone have to find their sweet spot and see what works and just continue experimenting.
So what do you think? Like, are you doing more getting back to the physical work, or are you doing more dabbling with AI in the next little while? What are your plans?
I think both. I'm also at the moment doing performance art pieces, like in progress. That's why I'm happy to be in the forest. For instance, the other day I put the painting on a tree. I kind of hang it there and I started to record it, and it's gonna just be there until I move out from the forest. So maybe a year, maybe even more, maybe less, but it's definitely gonna be through the winter and the spring. So I'm gonna see how the canvas will change and record that, and then maybe the recording of it, and then they're gonna put together a video and then mint it as it is, or maybe I'm gonna run it through AI and see how AI gonna change the video and like what's that gonna add. So there's gonna be a lot of experimenting with visual content and canvas painting. I did burn a painting a couple months ago, two paintings. I was commissioned by We're All Going to Die Wangdai community. It was 10, it's a project, NFT project, and after I finished the painting, I burned it, and I did record that. And I also plan to, I'm still not sure the way I want to release it because I do not see a lot of visual content being released right now as NFTs. And I'm not sure if I want to run it through AI or not. So I'm still kind of experimenting with that. But definitely painting's not going anywhere for me. I'm still painting. I also, ever since I started doing digital art with Procreate, still draw there, and now it's just AI added there. It's all like a little toolbox and kind of bouncing back and forth.
Yeah. What are your favorite brushes in Procreate? I always ask people that kind of stuff because I'm always curious. Mine lately have been the Blackburn pencil drawing brush. I love playing with that one.
I downloaded a bunch of different brushes, and I've noticed that I kind of just use the same, I guess the prime one. They have like a sketch brush that they have just the as when you whenever you download Procreate, they have the sketch. So I like this one, like a sketch one. And then I downloaded one that like very, very smooth. I'm very bad with names. I actually have no idea. Like you named one, and I'm trying to. It's like I think it's called GP. Yeah,
Okay,
no
I don't know. I don't
recollection. I
recognize
also
that.
like if you ask me what I paint with canvas, I also like I know they're red. Like I go to there's art supply store, and I buy exactly the same brushes for like years and years, and I know how they look like, and I know how they feel. But like out of like hundreds, you know how you go with like hundreds of brushes, and I can find them very fast in the store. But like if I have no idea what they call, and like they're flat here. That's
So
all
if you're
I
in like another town, you're like, so the brush with the thing, you know, with
the
the
flat one.
takes a little
It's like
searching
a tomato.
around. I notice most of your work, from my impression anyway, is portraiture. It's often feminine. Actually, a lot of my work is also feminine portraiture. But I'm curious, you know, what is it about that you feel motivates you or inspires you drawing from that kind of source material?
So I think it all started. I started painting for myself because I felt very lonely. I was at the time in China by myself, studying and just working. And so I started to paint. And my first couple of years, there was very raw art. It was just like dark, all the emotions, all the sadness, whatever you feel, it's just like there, very dramatic. But then I guess I slowly started to paint more myself in like very, very weird shapes. I didn't think it was me, but I guess people saying, oh, it's like, oh, you're painting
Okay,
yourself.
interesting.
And then one time when I already moved to New York, I already had a little bit some of the art sales happening. People started asking me for commissions. And the way I worked before and still do is like I stare at the blank canvas, and whatever I see there, I outline. So I do not look. That's also another tip for any artist watching this, if you're trying to discover your own art style. Do not very often painting on canvas, use reference photo. Don't do that. and try, and maybe without reference photo, this raw feeling gonna come out, and you just do it over and over and over again. And with the time, because you are not influenced immediately by some image of somebody, you're gonna be able to put something from your soul, and it's gonna be in like this distinguished style. So at least that was my journey with discovering my own art style. So, and with after I started painting like that and moved a little bit to portraiture, one person asked me if I could paint her a commission. And whenever I looked at her image, I did the same thing as before. Like, I would sit and meditate for some time and stare at the blank canvas, and whatever I see, I outline. And then when I stared at her photo, it was a couple, and I stared at her and her girlfriend, and I just looked and looked, and all of a sudden in my head, I just saw so many flowers. Like, there wasn't any flowers in the picture. So, and I just put it all on the canvas. And then after that, I guess some of this video went viral because I was posting work in progress and in general. So there more commissions came, and because people saw the flowers, they're like, oh, can we also get a flowers? And I called my flowers. And I guess because it was very flowers, very feminine, I attracted mostly a female collector base.
Right.
Because that was so many flowers, so many girl portraits, and majority of them were all commissioned. And I guess that's why because when I had during that time a male commissions or a family portrait, I do struggle with painting males. It takes me a longer time. It does take me, I don't know why, much longer time to paint. And then I'm also confused at how to kind of put it together.
It feels like more of a struggle.
Yes. The results are beautiful. People do enjoy it. It's still there. I guess maybe it has to do with I did not have a, like, growing up father figure. I was raised by a single mom and my grandma. So maybe that's why. And especially, like, right now I found this healthy, I'm in a healthy relationship. I have a boyfriend, so, and, like, he has a healthy family. So now I kind of see the structure. So, and now I also see, notice more and more how it has become just a little bit easier for me to put it on canvas to, like, paint male figures, but I still do prefer paint females because I connect with the feminine energy more, and they're just so beautiful. Muses.
I love painting females. I don't know. I just feel like it's more natural. I don't know. There's a flow to it that I enjoy that just feels better to me personally. So, yeah, I don't know if I could give reasons why, really, specifically. It just feels better to do, you know? It's just, I don't know what it is. You talked earlier about, you know, kind of how you're revealing your emotions. Maybe that's what it is. There's kind of a feminine sense to that, you know?
Well, I feel like in the past year, I've tried to analyze lots of things. And maybe that's what I said right now. Maybe it's not even true. Maybe in a couple of years, I'm going to look back and be like, actually, I guess that was a completely different thing. But it's like, right now, at least, it feels like that might be a reason. But if you would have asked me that a couple of years ago, your answer, that's what I would have said too. I would be like, I don't know. And like last year, I'm like, analyze yourself so hard. I'm like, maybe it's wrong.
No, and it's interesting. Look, I'm guessing if you look back through your own work, you might maybe see things about yourself too, right?
Yeah. Well, there was also lots of, at some point, I went into the therapy. So maybe what I'm saying right now, maybe it's not even my own, like, fully formed thoughts. Maybe I'm just like
regurgitating. Interesting. Yeah, no, it's interesting when you know, just thinking about your own creations and what you're doing and what you're expressing in it. And sometimes, like, when you talk about just looking at a blank canvas, you know, there's, you're allowing that unconscious side of you to kind of take over, right? Which is, you know, you talked about meditating. Is that something that you've kind of created a routine around, that where you meditate before you create?
I call meditation, to me, it's like, I can be like this right now. breathe in, breathe out in the moment. That's meditation to me sometimes. So it's not as you sit and listen to music and just like, it's just slowing yourself down. Just like slowing yourself down and just being present before you start painting. And because for me, I'm very, my brain is rushing very often. And with, especially with social media and managing all the different social media apps and trying to produce content, it's very addictive. And trying to switch from being on your phone and immediately being present in the moment, doing anything, that's a challenge. That's a meditation prior to finally slowing down.
What do you find has been most effective for you in terms of balancing that, you know, the demands of being present in social media yet wanting to focus on your art?
I guess so. Last year helped me a lot because I went through burnout. And with the bull market, I was also trading NFTs, trading crypto, trading stocks, just wearing so many hats, and also creating my art and trying to market myself as an artist and just build career. And last year brought so much good connection, success. And yet it brought also so much pain and this burnout. And I'm so grateful for that, because right now I do know signals. I do know how to manage myself. I do know at least like bare minimum the signals. For instance, when I feel this like inner rush, when I put this, like when you put your work first before yourself, this is unhealthy always, even because every single time I've noticed you do a drop, at least with me, every single time I dropped a collection or even one-on-one piece or a small addition, no matter what I drop, I get very excited and I get very going. And then when it doesn't sell, then I start working even harder, because for me, it's like, you need to do it right now, right this moment. And I would just overwork in this moment, and this is not okay. This year, I'm like, here is the strict schedule, and I guess forgiving myself if I like move away from this strict schedule. This is also important. Just having this routine where you not allow yourself to go, for instance, on Twitter Spaces, because sometimes it feels as if I don't join, I'm going to miss this opportunity. It's okay.
Right.
It's okay to miss some of it. It's okay, because there's going to be another one. Or maybe if you have a rest, you're going to have such a brilliant idea that it's going to just overdo all of those possible Twitter Spaces. So just trying to be as healthy and as balanced as possible, and accepting that it's okay to fail at trying this too. And just as long as you're going back and trying again, because again, with social media, still I'm like this urge to go back and see how like, does your post resonate with people or not, what's happening, and constant scrolling. I'm fighting with this every single day. Like, I'm trying different things now. I'm putting little notes instead of going on Twitter. When I want to go on Twitter, I go first to a note, and I'm like, today is January 16th, and I want to go into Twitter. Why do I want to do it? Do I have anything to do there right this moment? Do I need to share my art? Do I need to go on Twitter Spaces? Why? What is the purpose? Because sometimes we open the social media, and then we immediately like scroll, and we close. So what was the purpose? And if I do have a purpose, I will like obviously go. But so I try this trick. It helps.
Interesting. No, I do mindlessly scroll for sure. In fact, even this morning, I noticed I opened Twitter, scrolled, closed it, and instantly opened it again, because unconsciously I'd forgotten that I'd just closed it. And I continued scrolling. And it's just that in that moment, I realized, I'm like, wow, I need to like make some kind of routine time here where I'm not, you know, where maybe I'm looking at it during this time and then I'm not looking at it during this time, because it becomes like, it's to the point where it's not even conscious, right? Like you're just mindlessly scrolling. But I find also now, you know, when you look at all these different platforms, I've noticed, like, say for example, if you say Instagram or Twitter or TikTok or whatever, don't maybe this is just me, but they feel like they're getting to be more and more like each other to the point that you can't even tell which one you're actually in at the moment. You know, mm-hmm. like I might be watching, let's say it's a reel, is that Instagram? And then mm-hmm. go to TikTok and watch something there, and then go to Facebook and watch something there, YouTube Shorts. They all look very yeah. similar now, to the point that you can just be mindlessly flipping around, burning an hour or two just, you know, consuming your mental energy on this stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you on that. It's like going through exactly the same. And I, as a creator, and as somebody who I produce content, I produce videos, and then hopefully somebody sees this video and they connect with my art and they possibly collect or print will sell. So you're constantly trying to produce the content. And I realized mm-hmm. when I was starting to do this more fixed time on and don't let myself to stay too long on the app, I've noticed that actually all this work that you can do in the app, it's going to take you a couple hours, maybe less, with creating a video, posting, and also reposting it to Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, exactly. Pinterest, everything. So it's like same video, but different platform. It doesn't take as long, but the scrolling part, that's what takes the yes. most of the time. So as long as you create and you put it there and you log out and you like, maybe log in a couple hours to communicate with people, respond to comments, connect, and then log back out. Social media.
Yeah, I've been trying to put my phone away from me more often, like just not in my pocket or, you know, not in my proximity. That seems to help
yeah.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely. Can we talk just about, you know, like in terms of, you talked about working on this performance piece, but do you have other pieces that you're working on that are going to be NFTs that you're looking at in the near future, or what are your plans?
Well, I'm trying to NFT everything. My collection. Yeah. The collection that I started, my original one, Man Man Life, is a Chinese phrase for like take it easy, slow down.
Yeah.
This collection was, and still is, NFT and canvas painting pairing.
Right, yeah.
So it's, they're not changed. So I create a painting, I take a professional picture of it, and I'm in this picture. And my goal was to create 2,222 paintings. So mm-hmm. and it like will take 7 years. But because this year I got really into AI, I guess that collection will take longer. Because it's okay. so many pieces, and I paint a little bit less right now. So it's just like many, many years. So the point of this was that if something would to go wrong with the painting, I would have it saved on a blockchain. It would be there forever, ever, and it's going to be there, and anybody can right-click save it if they want to. It's there. So with my digital work, not everything going to be minted, but maybe one day if I'm very, very old and I'm like, just mint everything before I go, bye. here is all I have. Maybe I should like write in a will if something happens to me and my family should mint everything.
Hopefully by then the minting process will be quicker, because that could be painfully slow doing that for a whole bunch of pieces. Well, I don't know about you, but there's times where I'll do a whole bunch of pieces and I just won't have minted them. And then I'll go, okay, I'm going to go mint these 10 pieces. It'll take a while to like actually mint them all, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So. There was interesting conversation actually on this topic. I saw the other day, do not remember who tweeted it, but it was a collector. And he's like, I believe artists should not mint every single artwork they produce and should be like more uh-huh. curative. And I'm like, the problem is, if I will be very curative with 101, right? Because 101s, you're not producing it too fast. You're producing it at a good speed. Even if you do it once every single day, still, it's not too many. This is like
yeah.
scarcity, not even an issue, even if you produce every single one of them, mint every single one of them. But like curating them, sometimes in my entire 8 years of my painting and creating hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of artworks, maybe already thousands, I like truly connected, and I'm like, I'm a obsessed with you. Maybe 10. So if it was up to me and my most perfect piece of art ever minted, that would have been probably even 5. And the thing is, sometimes I look at the piece and I'm like, this is the most genius piece ever. Beautiful. Perfect. Not being collected for years. And then it's like, right. I paint something. I'm like, this is really not it. And immediately collected for the biggest amount. Everyone loves it. And I'm like, what is going on? So if,
totally.
I feel like you never know. You just don't know. So that's why it's so important to put yourself out there. Just like, if you're questioning, just put it out.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Like, to me, the whole advantage of blockchain technology is that this is like a record. Like, it's like a permanent historical record of, in this case, your work. So why not mint it all? Like, mint it and people can look at your history. People can look and go and see how you've changed, how you've evolved. Maybe on one day you were feeling differently and you painted in a different style. You know what I mean? Like, to me, there's value in that, right? I mean, I guess you could go the approach of, you know, being really heavily curated, but like you said, you might end up with 10 pieces after 2 years, you know, which I guess is okay if your goal is to have really scarce work. But I kind of like, to me, the advantage of the technology is that it shows, you know, it's like a timestamp on everything you create, right? Absolutely. Isn't that the point of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, recently had a situation where I started on Rarible when I just discovered NFTs before OpenSea. And wasn't it great?
Oh, it was Rarible. Great when it was new. I loved Rarible when it was new. Yeah.
Good old days. So I had some work there, and there was some pieces that I was just experimenting again, doing like weird stuff. They were like all just experimenting. Mm-hmm. And some work wasn't collected, and it's still there. I think some of the pieces, early pieces. Here is the little alpha. If one day somebody watching this and everything sold out, go on my Rarible.
Go to Rarible.
Go to Rarible. They might be like, they might not be listed, but if they're in my wallet, they're not sold. And somebody was scrolling and they found a artwork there. And majority of the stuff that I did on Rarible, it was kind of, I ran through a bunch of different apps and it was artwork very distorted and it was very, very playful. Mm-hmm. But this piece, it was more static. And it would match very well with my digital collection, La La Land. It's like that collection is on OpenSea. It has some value. It also, last year in January, it also got on front page. Similar way. Email once a year.
Nice. Okay, anyhow, I gotta get the emails going.
you do. It really works. You just need to like keep on, keep on pushing with it. So that collection has volume and like some liquidity in it, versus this Rarible piece. It was like it's just on Rarible, so I don't know what's happening. And I'm like, if you want to, I can burn it on Rarible and mint it to my La La Land collection. So you're gonna like have it with like all those other works. He's like, no. This is history.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Like, it's been minted like 2 years ago, and it's been there. And
that
like,
gives it some special value. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, if you want, it's gonna be there. I'm just trying to make sure.
You're well, a lot of people don't realize, like, those old Rarible pieces, those were ER721 tokens, which was, you know, it's an earlier type of token technology than the later. These ones now are all 1155s, which, you know, a lot of people that are really into collecting, they prefer the 721s because they're more unique, right? So, you know, it's true. If you're looking for, you know, those old pieces, Rarible's the place to go. You can find the old 721s on there. Of course, they also have 1155s now. But back from, what would that have been, 2019 maybe?
Yeah, 2019, 2020,
yeah.
Even like early, you know, 2021.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I think my first pieces on Rarible were maybe 2020. I'm not sure. I can't remember anymore. But anyway, no, you're right. Like, it's, that's the whole point of it. Is to have that timeline, to have that history there. That's the value, part of the value of it. Obviously, it's not the only value of it, but it's definitely an important part of it. So yeah, that's what's great about the blockchain, is that preservation process and making a record of it. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, hey, Arena, I really appreciate you taking this time to chat with me, and I'm glad you made it with safely with your little trip there, and that you were flexible with, you know, finding the time to make it work. So thank you very much for having this conversation with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for your time.
Right on. Okay, well, have a great day.
You too.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Hey, if you enjoyed this episode of NFP with Decline, please like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.